Jhené and Gola Jr., the podcast.
Living proof that you can go to school, but you can't buy class. I am going to slowly try and help everyone on the show learn to see the saving light that is candy corn. But in the meantime, some stuff went off after the World Series last night. It's Jhené Golick Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golick Jr. and Jhené Egbuamoke. And you heard it in the update there just now. Jhené, I know these are happy times in so many ways for the people of Los Angeles on the sports front. The Lakers went ahead and got it done. The Los Angeles Dodgers are your 2020 World Series champions. But the scene after the game last night with Justin Turner, who was pulled earlier in the game after an inconclusive test that turned out to be a positive test for COVID-19, pulled him off of the field, found his way into the celebration, and all hell broke loose after that.
So I appreciate how you teed me up right there, but I just have to tell you that on my Twitter feed, I asked people, is candy corn actually good? And 64% said, no way, it's horrible. So back to our conversation. Being in LA after the game was right as the game was being won, I could hear from my balcony, which is on the border of I'm not going to tell you where I live.
Yeah, I was going to say, probably not do that, but it was near some action. We'll put it that way.
It was near some action. Let's just say I'm in a mix of everything, okay? Fireworks. Again, illegal fireworks, but fireworks. And, this was the 17th title for the Lakers, the 7th, I believe, for the Dodgers. And we saw that floating around combined is 24. And that's an homage to Kobe Bryant. And so the spirit of what the Dodgers were able to do was absolutely alive and well. And even to this morning, as I was driving around to my workout yesterday, I was seeing, it's a special time of year where people are using flags, whether it is, the political climate, all that type of stuff. Every flag that I saw yesterday, and there I've seen a lot, were for the Dodgers. Like, this was the heartbeat of the city, the sports world, when it came to the Lakers and now the Dodgers to carry the baton. And I think the reason why people are so jubilant is because this has been a stressful year, especially in the city, especially when it happened, with the lockdown. We're still in the middle of a surge and all that type of stuff. And so this was a sign of solidarity and unity, and it just felt really good. The hardest part was seeing what the conversations were after that, just because I think a lot of the issues when it came to Justin Turner were communication. And we saw that in the middle of a game when you're getting communicated that you have a positivity when it comes to the COVID virus. But then even after not getting the answers to why he would be allowed to go out there, that was the frustrating part. It didn't stop the celebrations, but it still is like, that shouldn't be the headline. But guess what? That is 2020.
Well, I'm going to say, everything you just mentioned, even as you were talking about it right now, you're like, we're in the middle of a surge. We're seeing numbers spike up. We can't avoid all of this, and I think people thought just because sports were back and happening meant that all of a sudden that stuff didn't exist in this way. And for Major League Baseball, who had a good run this postseason leading up to the World Series of days without anyone testing positive and things going on, now has a mess on their hands. Because you're right, the story should be all of those things. We should probably talk about Clayton Kershaw legacy stuff and Mookie Betts coming over in year one. And instead, we were all watching after that game like, how the hell is this possible? How the hell is this happening? How is Justin Turner pulled off the field, deemed unable to be out during the body of gameplay, but then finds his way back onto the field in the game? And I look at this, Jhené, and I say, because we've heard so many things on both sides of the coin with this already, Justin Turner should not have been allowed back out there, period. Major League Baseball should have made sure that that happened. They're saying he disregarded the rules. They're launching an investigation into this now because come hell or high water, Justin Turner was going to push his way back out onto that field if he had the chance.
Yeah, if it's Justin Turner, suffering potential punishment for disregarding the rules, I think his entire team was complicit in his disregard, because they didn't have a problem sitting next to them, sitting next to him in a team photo. And I think this is where, obviously the messaging and the imagery is not good after, accomplishing an entire season in the MLB and then having this being what we're talking about. I think the error was in the communication, because if there was a positive case, and the reason why people are comfortable with him being around, as it's communicated by his teammates and the personnel, is that, hey, he's already been exposed to and been around all these people anyways, which is why as a team, we're saying we're cool with him being a part of that group photo and hugging people and all that type of stuff. I'm sure that that was a decision that each individual, as they saw him and understood what he was going through, was making in real time. But none of that was communicated. Still, like, when you have this big stage and this is what you're seeing, like, a message is going to go a long way when you see that image of, we know he's positive, he's sitting there. They should have had the opportunity in real time to say, hey guys, like, we see this happening. We've already known he's exposed, you know, himself to this group of people. Each person is making an individual choice to be with him at this time. But that wasn't there. Like, we didn't have that kind of communication.
But I can say, I don't even think they should have been allowed that, Sinead, because you look at this, the reason we've had so many leagues say, we're not going to do jersey swaps after game, we're going to wear masks even on the field, where so many people have said, well, these guys have already been, kind of like you said, and like a lot of people have said, exposed to each other. If you're these leagues, you're thinking, who knows, especially with baseball, how far apart you are. Maybe you haven't come in close contact with this person. Maybe you haven't found a way there, and so limiting the exposure in these spots. Because, again, I understand, like, and in that moment, they all just won a championship. I you know, we can appreciate that everyone's looking and saying, oh, Justin's out here and we just saw this happen. Their mind is everywhere else in that moment. It is on Major League Baseball and the people that make those decisions to say in that instance, nah, we can't have him anywhere near this. And for them to say, nah, he just disregarded security, then, like, how good were any of the systems that you had put in place, period, in that? And what are you going to do about it after? Because I think all of this ultimately reeks of, man, Major League Baseball made it to the finish line now, and I'm not sure how much they're going to pretend to care anymore.
I think the way I see the situation is sometimes you have to protect the athlete from themselves. A lot of times when we're coming back from injury quicker than necessary because there's a big game, and I think of that Kevin Durant situation where there was so much public pressure for him to come back and help the Warriors close out, you know, or at least compete and win versus the Raptors. You know, as an athlete, you're wired to think, I'm good. Like, I'm unstoppable in my head. I need to go out there and be there for my team. It's the same mindset that we carry when we win. And we, like, this is a Dodger team that has been waiting for this moment, has been scrutinized, has been under huge pressure. And sometimes, like you said, the institution, the MLB, needs to protect the athlete, or even sometimes the organization who is in the thralls of celebrating and jubilance and all that type of stuff, from themselves. And we didn't see that communicated, because guess what? Like, I'm here to tell you, if I won a championship and that happened to me, I'm still going to fight for that memory. Now, I may not sit next to everybody. I'd be asking, like, y'all have me sit 6 feet in front in the team photo, and I'll have my mask, you know, on, or I want the trophy last. You know what I mean? So I understand why he felt compelled to go out there and the team felt compelled to be around him. I just think that it's on the institution to protect them from those moments as well.
Well, it's on the institution to make sure that these things, it's the same reason we take away guys' football helmets in football when they have a concussion, because yep. You know the way everyone involved in this is wired. Now, we mentioned Major League Baseball had a response. Chin Angle Jr. here on ESPN Radio. They issued a statement saying Dodgers third baseman Justin Turner's decision to celebrate with his team Tuesday night, despite testing positive for COVID-19, was, quote, wrong, put everyone he came in contact with at risk. They said they learned of his positive test during last night's 3-1 victory. The league says it immediately put him into isolation for the safety of those around him upon receiving notice of a positive test result. Quote, it is clear that Turner chose to disregard the agreed-upon joint protocols and the instructions he was given regarding the safety and protection of others. When MLB security raised the matter of being on field with Turner, he emphatically refused to comply. So Major League Baseball's now come out and passed the buck and said, nah, he just didn't listen to us here. So the next thing we wait for to Chiné is to see what they will do as far as a potential punishment here and how they will act in this instance. Because, again, there's part of me that looks at this and says, man, Major League Baseball got to the finish line, and they're going to probably look at this and say, can we weather one bad day of PR before we ride off into the sunset saying we managed to pull this off at this point? Because, again, for him to just make it back to the field there indicates some level of a lack of preparedness for that exact situation you were dreading. But one you had to consider the way we've considered so many hypotheticals leading up to this moment.
Yeah, I think it was institutional failure, because if I'm that security guard and I see Justin Turner, like, I want to go out there, I want to be there. Like, you have to have a system prepared to stop that person from doing that, and it just didn't happen on the biggest stage, which was tough.
It is tough, and we want to hear from you at Chinay, at Mike Golic Jr. Chinay and Golic Jr. reminding you, be a part of Chinay and Golic Jr. Nation on that Dr. Pepper Twitter feed. ESPN Nation is presented by Dr. Pepper. It's official. College football's back, and so is your favorite Dr. Pepper-loving college football town, Fansville. Head to a store near you and treat your inner college football fan to an ice-cold 20-ounce Dr. Pepper today. And we will get into the Wisconsin Badgers having to cancel their game against Nebraska, the potential ramifications for the Big Ten, all of those news as COVID-19 again works its way back into the main headlines in sports. And it's a shame, Chinay, because there are so many elements of last night's game that we do want to get to. So coming up next, we'll talk to one of our great MLB analysts on not only what he expected from Major League Baseball in the situation we saw with Justin Turner, but what Kevin Cash has to answer for as far as his decision-making in-game for the Tampa Bay Rays. That's all coming up next. It's Chinay and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
Chinay and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Already been knee-deep in a breakdown of questionable decision-making on the World Series stage, and we have not talked about a single thing yet from the nine innings of baseball. It was that kind of night. It's Chinay and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio, ESPN News. Mike Golic Jr. and Chinay Agwumike. Coming up next, we'll try and dive into college football as all of the nightmare scenarios for the Big Ten seem to be coming true early on in their foray into a football season. But right now, we are delighted to be joined in studio by our ESPN MLB analyst, Doug Glanville. In studio, giving us the Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. No contract, no compromise. And Doug, we had an exciting game six in the World Series. The Dodgers came back to win, and all anybody wants to seem to talk about is how the hell Justin Turner got back out onto the field after that game was over. How surprised were you just the way that entire scenario played out with a player testing positive, being pulled mid-game, and being front and center for the celebration?
I mean, total shock. I mean, I was texting Jason Stark. We go way back, and I said, I think Justin Turner's on the field. And he was like, no, that would be just total breach of protocol. And sure enough, I saw the pictures, I watched it, and there he was. And it wasn't like hanging out. He's taking pictures. He's with his family, his other families. It was like, I mean, he tested positive, right? It wasn't false positive. It was like a positive test. So we had no idea initially what was going on. And then I kind of started to read more about it. And I just still don't understand what exactly or how that happened.
We need answers, Sway. Here with Doug Glanville, ESPN MLB analyst and former MLB player for the Cubs Phillies here on Chinay and Golic Jr. Now, is it okay, Doug, if I ask you about the actual game? Are we cool with this?
Yeah, I'm good.
Okay, good. Because one of my favorite shots was actually after, you know, when Clayton Kershaw was running onto the field, he was looking up just sort of like in this huge sense of relief. It seemed spiritual. Like it, you could just see the weight lifted off of his shoulders and how excited he was to finally get this win. Do we think that the narrative surrounding Clayton Kershaw has finally ended when it comes to his postseason struggles?
Yeah, it changes the narrative 180 degrees. And to some degree, it was unfair that so much was on him. He's had a storied career. He's a Hall of Famer. I mean, this guy is one of the best left-handed pitchers of all time. But yes, he's had his bumps in the road in the postseason, but he's also had a lot of good games. And at this age, fighting battles and injuries and still getting two wins in the World Series, that's sort of the exclamation point he needs. So I think it does shift that narrative quite a bit.
It shifts the narrative a lot for him, and certainly his performance came in Game 5. We got to see that. And going into Game 6, all the pitching talk here was firmly on the other side for the Rays. You got Blake Snell dealing in this game, and he becomes just the second pitcher in the last 20 seasons to be pulled from a game with at least 9 strikeouts before he threw his 75th pitch. When you look at that decision, we hear all about the numbers and the decision science that goes into this. What was your reaction sitting and watching him leave the mound under protest?
What? That was my reaction. I get the data. In fact, go back, 2014, I actually interviewed for the Rays job when Kevin Cash got it. And I understand the Rays philosophy enough to say that they were very concerned in that interview about how you actually manage people. It wasn't about X's and O's. It was about sort of people and circumstances around your personnel and engagement with the front office. So that is their priority. And I think there's a silver lining to that, that you do care about more the humanity of it, but they are driven by data. And the data makes sense, right? The third time through the order, you're going to struggle. That's true for pretty much every pitcher on the planet. And so they have this beautiful bullpen lined up that they can set up. But then you lose that X factor, and that is the center stage. Snell is shining. The catcher probably knows it. And by the way, the Los Angeles Dodgers knew it. And that last piece of data that you don't have access in real time matters. And you know as a hitter when you go and you say, wait a minute, how am I going to hit this guy? And Mookie Betts was, you know, explaining that post game. I remember we played Kevin Brown in San Diego. I was a leadoff hitter. I go in the box and Brown, first at bat, I ground out to short. I walk in the dug. I said, look, fellas, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. We're in trouble tonight. You know, like, and yeah, it's like, do you say that? Should I lie? But the fact is you want people to be prepared. They had no answer for the riddle that was Blake Snell last night. And the best thing that happened to the Dodgers was he came out of the game.
Doug Glanville, our ESPN MLB analyst, with us here in studio on Chiney and Golic Jr., Mike Golic Jr. and Chiney Agbemike. So, Doug, what do we do about it? Because we have this conversation, I feel like, every time something like this happens right. In a big game, and we wail and gnash our teeth, and then these teams go out here and execute what the data tells them. Yet again, is this something, and I heard Buster Olney bring this up earlier today, is this something Major League Baseball might want to look into and say, you know what, having our star pitchers on the mound in big moments is probably something we need to do a better job of incentivizing?
Well, it's partly the entertainment question around really any sport, but baseball in particular. This idea of you have to balance this business sensibility. You have to balance, okay, this is just pure winning. We're going to shift and have 13 guys on the right side of the infield because that works. And you have to compare that to the feedback of, is this even interesting? And yeah, I grew up in an era where there was aces and they dueled and they go 8-9 innings, complete games. That's unheard of because the data says it's better to have different looks for the hitter. Now, the Rays got there on that philosophy, and it worked because they were the runner-up to world championship. So it's hard to argue against that outcome, but you also start to look at it at a more granular level at center stage in the World Series, and you say, is this really interesting? You're in the World Series, and teams are running out 7 pitchers in a game. You start to go, I don't know, maybe we need to sort of change something here. And Blake Snell kind of crystallizes it because he had an ace performance going. Untouchable. He had 29 fastballs they didn't put in play. They didn't put it in play. This is the best offense in Major League Baseball. So, you know, but the decision can be clearly sort of verified by the manager, Cash. He made the decision, and the data backs it up, but the outcome was horrible.
Here with Doug Glanville, ESPN MLB analyst. And you know, I really like this here on Chiney and Golic Jr. I really like this because I'm starting to realize right now we're the trifecta. College football analyst, Mike Golic Jr. I'm a basketball analyst. You're a baseball analyst. And we know what it's like to be on the beat for calling a season like no other. What do you take away from calling and understanding and analyzing the World Series this time in particular, whether it's Mookie's play or Corey Seager's dominance?
Well, I think you take away that, you know, the teams that, you know, look at the Dodgers, for example, they were a complete team. But what was magical about them is they sort of embodied Mookie Betts, that here's a big talent that played small ball. I mean, he really figured out how to execute those small plays that actually won the championship. He makes the great defensive play at the wall. His base running got them 2 runs that you don't normally get because they were simple ground balls in the infield. So, yeah, it's nice to see the big home run, the walk-off. But then you realize that there are small elements. And that's part of the reason we're also focusing on Blake Snell, because it was a small decision that had this huge outcome. It was consequential. And so the fact that there's some pride of, hey, they made it through a season in this horrible health crisis, and it still was a passionate, productive, I'd say, World Series, that is something to be said. And I certainly give a lot of credit to Major League Baseball to kind of making it through, and the players, you know, taking it seriously. It unfortunately ended in this horrible outcome around Justin Turner. but I think it was still exciting frontline baseball for the most part.
Absolutely, and they deserve a lot of credit for that run up to the World Series. Again, so many days without any positive tests, the things that went into trying to make this a reality. So, Doug, we appreciate the time and the insight as always, man. We're looking forward to talking to you again soon.
All right. Thanks. Thanks to you both.
Our ESPN MLB analyst, Doug Glanville, with us here. Chiney and Golic Jr., presented by Progressive Insurance. Quoting home insurance just got easier with Progressive's Home Quote Explorer. Quote and buy all online at progressive.com. But coming up next, we got to shift gears. COVID headlines again dominating the world of college football. What could the Big Ten have possibly done to prevent this? We'll tell you that next. It's Chiney and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
Chiney and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Coming up in about 10 minutes. Help get you ready as we hit Wednesday of the week. We start looking towards the following weekend here and taking stock of where we're at in the NFL season. getting towards the trade deadline, what teams need to be loading up? Aaron Schatz of Football Outsider is going to be with us in about 10 minutes to figure that out. It's Chinay Ngola Jr. here on ESPN Radio, ESPN News. We're presented by Progressive Insurance, and guests join us on the show, Penn's Oil Performance Line. And Chinay, we get to go from talking about Justin Turner testing positive, finding out during the World Series, and then still somehow celebrating with his team even after he was pulled off the field, to now talking about Wisconsin having to pause their football program right now because of an outbreak of 12 positive COVID cases within the program, including their head coach, Paul Christ, and their game against Nebraska this upcoming weekend being canceled. When it rains, it pours, man. There are just some days like this, right?
So we were talking about this in the pre-show meeting, and I was like, okay, I need you, Junior, to set the scene for why this is probably one of the worst case scenarios you could have when restarting when it comes to Wisconsin and what they're going through.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, you look at everything that's happened with all this, and we've heard strong opinions all throughout the day. You look at this situation, and what Wisconsin, through 1 week of a restart of play in Big Ten, has had to go through. They have now gone through playing on Friday night and beaten the heck out of Illinois in that spot, showing off Graham Mertz, their quarterback, who stepped in for an already injured Jack Cohn, their starter, who was hurt during preseason camp. They go through that game. Everyone's talking about them glowingly. Then this happens. You get a positive test from Graham Mertz after that, who is now in the protocol that keeps him out 21 days following a positive test in the Big Ten. Their third-string quarterback, Chase Wolf, also tested positive for COVID-19 and is in that same boat. Your head coach and 11 other people testing positive inside that program. That game against Nebraska canceled. And now, going forward, you are without either of your top two quarterbacks for the foreseeable future. And that's even before you get to all the normal health concerns that come with this in the middle of the pandemic, which seems callous to even brush over in the way I just did there. And so it's all this constant balancing act. And it's week one of them trying to do this 8 times in 8 weeks, Chinay. I just have no idea how they see this getting done.
So that's what you mean by it's pouring. Thank you for spelling it out. Now, what I see here is a lot of people are saying, and it's largely true, like your chances when you have to deal with this type of thing, especially when it's your quarterback position, are extremely slim. But there is, to some degree, because I said it's not a 0% chance that they can't compete in the Big Ten championship, because by rule book, it means you hopefully will have 6 games, right? So they sort of could miss one more game and still play out the rest of their slate and still qualify. But still, that's an uphill battle when you're missing key players, your coach. And I say key players because, like, it's the quarterback position, and then what, about 9 others possibly?
Yep.
So I guess here is, while it's a real, you can still push forward playing, it's an impossible tightrope. And now you wonder, okay, was it worth it? Was it really worth it for you to have to go and mobilize and now hopefully put people, and this is where the quality of play sort of comes into question. People are going to be out there that, you know, in the future, because it's a 21-day, right?
Protocol. 21 days.
21-day protocol, but the next game could come within at least 14. Now you're putting people out there, and then you start thinking, like, as a university purpose and, you know, an integrity purpose, where you're making decisions for these student athletes, is it worth it overall? And that's the hardest thing for me to reconcile when you have a season that looks like the odds of you making it to where you want to go are very slim, and now you're putting people in position where it's not their best luck either.
Chinay Ngola Jr. here on ESPN Radio. It's time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. And Chinay, you're right. That impossible tightrope gets even tougher because, especially in the world of college football, the views on this entire approach to the virus are so divided. The Big Ten's been the perfect case study of that, with the hellscape we saw this summer of the way that people dealt with this all around this. The university presidents trying to exercise caution, coaches, players, and parents a wailing and gnashing of teeth in this, all working counter to one another, all refusing to be on the same page until it seemed like it was too late. And that's what Paul Feinbaum, one of our great ESPN college football analysts, you hear him on the Paul Feinbaum Show each and every day on the radio. Paul was on First Take talking about the entire approach of Wisconsin dealing with this and the Big Ten returning to play this year.
I don't know all the details, but look at the COVID map. That's one of the hot spots in the country right now, Matt. So the Midwest is a real problem when it comes to COVID, and that's where the Big Ten primarily is. So I don't think this is the end of it. And by giving themselves no wiggle room, the SEC and the ACC and the Big 12 all had 2 bye weeks. So if they had a problem, they could recover. The Big Ten can't recover, and they're going to have a very uneven route now to the championship game, especially on the Wisconsin side of the ledger. I mean, Ohio State is pretty safe on one side, as long as they don't get in trouble with COVID. But Wisconsin may have seen its hopes of getting to the title game gone now because of all this.
Straight Talk Wireless, no contract, no compromise. And Shanae, I heard earlier in that, and I promise I'm not taking this out of context, when I heard Paul Feinbaum say this is what the Big Ten wanted, meaning the presidents who didn't want to play this season originally and then were pushed into this by everyone involved we just mentioned, said, all right, we're going to exercise extreme caution. That 21-day return has cardiac examination built into this to try and make sure that that portion of it, myocarditis, that became such a big part of this conversation, is well addressed before anyone thinks about coming back to the field. It's given the Big Ten an impossible task. You look at it and say, is there anything they could have done? And the answer in this instance, unless you want to say go back and rewrite all of that history and say we didn't feel like exercising all of this caution, or we wanted to leave ourselves that wiggle room, you had to do that before the season, because you've put yourself in a position now where you thought you were standing up for something, and in the end, you ended up reversing course because you felt all that pressure from the outside world. And I believe that this is about an Ohio State team that believes so firmly that it could be in the part of the national championship conversation, the college football playoff, that getting them out there meant a lot to the conference to save face as everyone else could be playing. But if you don't have the fortitude to stick with your original decision, these are the problems that you find yourself in. This is the place you get yourself to.
I absolutely agree. And, you know, it's bigger than that, because you see what happened with Florida and they have six cases. And so this is something that all college institutions and, you know, schools are going to have to be dealing with, you know, the realities of how long it took you to get on the same page. And now you have an impossible situation for one school where a lot of these athletes made that huge risk to say, I want to come out here and play. Third stringers are out here trying to play and then they're still not being able to play. So that is what sort of breaks my heart. But I think this is where you look at, you know, a situation where, you know, the Texans had to shut down their facility, but it's on a bye week, and then now we have these conversations about potentially having that week 18. Like, this is why you need that wiggle room. You need to be able to have, you know, these athletes taken care of, especially when it's a 21-day, you know, period in which they're, you know, you can't really touch the field or be around people, and also have the opportunity to compete as well, because at some point it feels like you're risking all these things, and then the athletes are the ones that probably end up falling on the short end of the stick.
This is a reminder that the people that led them in this particular instance in the Big Ten lacked just that, a lot of leadership in this situation, because there wasn't cohesion in the way they went about this. There wasn't a set plan that gave them the best possibility of succeeding in a situation that, like you said, might be an impossible tightrope and impossible to succeed in anyway. But when you're not willing to stand on your own two feet and believe in the decision you made and communicate it through thoroughly enough, these are the things that end up coming up, and you're exactly right. Other people pay the price for it. People who have very little recourse to do anything else in this instance but go out and try and play the way most of these players do. So it becomes immensely frustrating in that. And that's before we even get to the other portions of the competitive side of it, which, quite frankly, we can get to in a bit because they're comparatively less important in a lot of this instance. So we will get through more of that, trust me, because unfortunately we're not going to be done with this college football disruption news anytime soon. But the NFL managing to go along, the resources they've got at their disposal, so much so that we're already up on the trade deadline. Which teams need to load up for the road ahead? We'll get that answer next. It's Chenan Gold Jr. on ESPN Radio.
Chenan and Golic Jr., the podcast.
God, I could listen to Mike Tomlin press conferences until the end of time. This could be 3 hours of Mike T quotes from press conferences. You wouldn't get any argument from me, Janae.
I'd agree. He's a good guy.
He is a gem, and with some of the best statements on planet Earth. It's Janae Angola Jr. here on ESPN Radio, ESPN News. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Mike Golic Jr. and Shanae Igwumike, and while the rest of us are sitting here gawking over the Pittsburgh Steelers, the lone undefeated remaining in the NFL, there are other people that have some questions, namely our friend Aaron Schatz, Port of Football Outsiders, who joins us in the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Pennzoil synthetic motor oils are made from natural gas, gives you unbeatable engine protection. The proof is in the Pennzoil, based on Sequence 4A wear testing using SAE 5W30. And Aaron, I'm curious, because the Steelers held on. They managed, despite turning the ball over three times, to beat the Titans and remain undefeated. As you guys look at them, though, are you sold on them as one of the top contenders in the AFC right now?
Yeah, I'm definitely sold on them as a top contender, but you do have to understand the easy schedule that they've played so far. So based on our numbers, they've played the second easiest schedule in the league so far. Only Indianapolis has played an easier schedule. But here's the thing. It doesn't get much harder. Their schedule going forward ranks 24th. So not only are they a really good team, even after you adjust for the schedule they've played, it's not like they're going to be facing a tough schedule going forward, although obviously playing Baltimore this week is pretty hard.
Even looking forward, though, down the road, Aaron, to the playoffs, for that reason, is this a Steelers team that should be thinking about trying to buy at the deadline in some way, shape, or form?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the more you can add, the better. I would say secondary would be good because their front seven is so solid. I mean, obviously they miss Devin Bush, the linebacker who got injured, and if you can replace him, that would be good. But otherwise, their front seven is so solid that there's no work that needs to be done on the front line or the edge rushers. They're number one in the league in both adjusted line yards allowed and adjusted sack rate. So they're getting to the quarterback and they're stopping opposing runners.
Aaron Schatz of Football Outsiders here with us on Chanae and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio. Now, after rumors of the Seahawks and the Ravens, AB lands with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. How could Antonio Brown's impact really translate to Tampa's offense right now?
I can't imagine that Antonio Brown can play any better than the wide receivers that Tampa Bay already has. In our DVOA ratings for wide receivers, Tampa Bay's top three receivers, that's Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, and Scotty Miller, are ranked in the top five. That's three guys in the top five. And there are injury issues, and Godwin may miss a couple of games now. But other than needing to replace those guys due to injury, if they're all healthy, I don't know if Antonio Brown can be better than what Tampa Bay has already gotten out of those guys so far.
It's a strange thing to consider, but 2020 might be the year to consider such strange things in all of this. I'll add another one to that list, Aaron, because we're going through the same sort of receiver drama in Cleveland right now with the Browns. The thought and the effect on the offense for Baker Mayfield and this Browns outfit with Odell Beckham Jr. off the field, are any of the conversations, these narrative things true, that he can be better with Odell absent in that offense?
No, it doesn't seem to me like the Cleveland offense is based around feeding Odell Beckham no matter what. I mean, they distribute the ball. It's mostly based around Kevin Stefanski's scheme and getting Baker Mayfield outside with play action and rollouts and bootlegs, and that doesn't change whether Odell Beckham is on the field or not.
Aaron Schatz, Football Outsiders, here with us on Chanae and Golic Jr. Now, waves were also being made with the timing of Miami's quarterback switch. How do you see Tua Tagovailoa's impact on Miami's offense, being considered that this was like a very risky timing move when it came to the momentum that Fitzpatrick had?
Yeah, I understand the reason why they're doing this in the long term. They want to get Tua on the field as soon as they feel that he's ready, because the sooner you can start evaluating a young quarterback, the better. The sooner you can start having him get experience, the better. That being said, if we're looking at Miami actually making the playoffs this year, and they are competitive, this is a 3-3 team right now, it really hurts. There's no doubt that what you would expect from a first-round pick is going to be worse than what you've gotten from Ryan Fitzpatrick so far. And in fact, adding Tua Tagovailoa to Miami's projection for the rest of the year drops their odds and our playoff odds of making the playoffs from 31% to 18%.
It's incredible to consider. It is a bold move by Brian Flores and that organization, going all in apparently on a much longer timeline. Aaron, we appreciate the time and the information as always, man. We will talk to you next week.
Thanks, Aaron.
Sounds good. Talk to you next week.
Aaron Schatz of Football Outsiders with us here on Chanae and Golic Jr. Just hearing that alone, the Dolphins' playoff chances, and Chanae, this would be wholly ahead of schedule for that team. Talking about that in this season, the reason we, you know, had Brian Flores with an extra year on his contract, now coming and surprising maybe even them out of nowhere the way they were thinking about this.
Yeah, if I'm a Dolphins fan, I'm like, try not to hear those things. Like, I would have been super nervous. I'm like, alrighty, why are we doing this? And you're like, okay, our odds dropped by almost 50%. What's happening here?
Not great. It's one of those, you're right. If long you're a term. Dolphins fan, just plug your ears and
trust,
understand.
Trust the process. Trust it.
That's what Tank for Tua always was supposed to be. It was supposed to be their version of the process. But
they messed around and won too much.
And listen, and I said this last year, those are always the things that are possible when you let Ryan Fitzpatrick be your tanking quarterback. If you're
right.
A team looking to tank, don't bring Fitzmagic into your city. No worries about tanking, though. Last night, we crowned a champion in Major League Baseball. And coming up next, we'll remind everyone why it can never just be about what happens on the diamond. It's Chanae and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.